All right, everybody, it's the Brain Trust Podcast. My name's Adam Vassin. I'm a tabletop game designer in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
And my name's Julius. I'm a tabletop game designer in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Adam, what's up?
Just living the dream. Another week. Is this weekly? Another show.
Another show that's happening during a week.
Yeah, just ready to vibe. I don't know if I'm supposed to suspend the disbelief or just say we've been talking for an hour.
We're already
in the zone. Like, this is going to be a good episode because we're there already.
We're punched up, punched out. I got some new peripherals recently. Can I tell you about them?
Please do.
I got a gamer keypad. Okay? It fits your hand ergonomically like something a character in Minority Report would use at their desk job, not at their precog job. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like you're typing furiously like 1 million words per minute because your hand like barely has to move.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing keeping me from typing fast. As always, the thing keeping me from typing quickly is the hardware, not my own mind, unable to come up with sentences fast enough. I think I'm pretty close to... I know the stenographers probably don't literally think faster than I do, but I think on some level the hardware you use like influences the way your brain works.
Yeah, I think it must, because like typing, you're thinking of each individual character. With steno, yeah, it's more like sounds, right?
Yeah, and you're getting combinations and stuff. And so anyway, I've decided to take the first step of my journey in becoming an apex human being, absolutely sigma level computer user. And I got one of those Razer keyboards, and I am using it for digital art, and I actually just set it up for layout. And so now I was laying something out this week for the Torque Design Derby Jam, which is still going on. I was laying out an awesome game that someone submitted that you can find on there. And I put all the hotkeys for insert page break, insert frame break, insert double page break, and stuff that in Affinity you have to like go to three menus to start inputting. And I was precogging all kinds of shit here. I was taking out my own eyeballs. Like, that was great. And I've been using it for digital art too, and I have brush size on the scroll wheel. Okay, I've got undo and redo on the D-pad, just like everybody's wanted.
I mean, that's pretty slick. I think often too, like, I change brush size. The normal Photoshop shortcut is the brackets.
Yes. And you're just hammering on the brackets too.
My drawing tablet is to the left of my keyboard, and the brackets are all the way to the right of the keyboard. And I'm right-handed. So I actually have to, like, cross my arms all the time. Oh, God. Yeah, it might be time for me to enhance my rig.
If you enhance your rig alongside me, I can give you my hotkeys. it's got to be RGB for me.
There's no other way.
There's no other way. Let me just give you my action row, okay? I'm just going to give you my action row, and that'll help you decide whether or not this makes sense for you. First key, toggle between brush and smudge tool.
Love that.
Second key, color picker. That's on my middle finger. Third key, erase tool. Fourth key on my pinky. That's going to be lasso. And I have the undo. Like I said, the undo button is on the D-pad. I have a big-ass fucking smasher button on my thumb when I want to add a new layer. I've got a little button for my thumb that changes what active color I'm using. And I have hotkeys for switching, getting a new layer, selecting stuff on layers, just everything like that. And that's just a little bit of what I'm fucking with on the daily here.
Yeah, that's elite.
And then you can use it for gaming.
Bonus, yeah.
And I'm not so good at using it for gaming, I would say.
I can't imagine using it for gaming, but that is its intended purpose.
I'm very much a controller player, so if I could do digital art and layout with a Xbox One controller, I would have figured that out.
Oh, yeah. I used to see people who would use PlayStation controllers and like Bluetooth it to their computer to mess with type. That's and it cool. was so cool, and I just had what it's like beyond my understanding, but there's the two joysticks, and it would so there's each joystick has an X and an X axis and a Y axis, and then there's the sort of diagonals in between. So it wow. would be like stroke width, character height, character width,
oh my God.
And like italics. And they would just be messing with the joysticks and making all these unique characters from the same font family. It was so cool.
Imagine using the Liquify tool with a controller.
Oh, it'd be satisfying. Even, I know this is, like, redundant, because you could just use the smudge with a graphics tablet, but the idea of me holding the PS5 controller and using that, like, touch interface part in the middle.
Yes. Yeah, there's... and. I think the biggest piece that's missing from all modern layout applications is there's no rumble or HD rumble on any of this stuff.
I was going to say sound.
Sound is really important too, like in Death Stranding, where a little baby will start crying at you from your controller, and you got to jostle your controller. Same way, every time I save a document, I want a Vine boom sound plus... rumble with it.
I want it to be this sort of like shepherd's tone that the longer I go without saving, it starts to drive me mad. But then as soon as I hit save, it goes quiet again, and it just like continues to build up over this very long arc. And as soon as I become aware of it, it's like, oh, I guess it's been a while since I saved it.
Every time Photoshop crashes, it's the sound where the guy's like, yeah, Seb's laughing really hard right now. We're cooking. This is ostensibly a... oh, so my other peripheral. I was about to do the thing where I are like, oh, we're a show about game design, but...
yeah.
Game design is actually... okay, so anyone who's on the fence about getting one of these, like, funky little things to do your work on, it's actually okay to spend a little bit of money on a fun thing to learn how to do.
Absolutely.
That's okay. I had to make it okay for myself. It's not that much, like under $100, I believe. It's RGB as all get out, just like my grandpa likes. That shit's RGB as all get out. Okay, the thing I got yesterday was a vertical mouse. You know what I'm talking about with this?
No.
Okay, take your mouse, and I want you to act like you're doing a Crooks rail grind with it.
Okay.
So it's on an angle.
Yeah.
To the side. And your hand is basically forming a, I can't make this reference anymore because he became our president was really bad. But back in the day when Donald Trump was on The Apprentice, he would do this hand gesture where he was like, you're fired. Are you familiar with this?
Vaguely. He's okay. Just like pointing at someone, right?
Kind of. Anyway, it's a mouse that has your hand at a more comfortable angle. And it is, like, crooked to your thumb. Mine looks straight up like a strain. I'm going to send you a picture of it. That's probably the best way for you to understand WTF I'm talking about. But there is one critical issue with it that I want to kind of get your take on. I'm going to send this picture to you, and then you tell me what the brand is that you can visibly see on here.
Okay.
Okay. Every time I look down at the mouse, I am looking at this one word. You have notification silence, and I'm going to notify you anyway. Get notified. Get notified, you asshole.
Whoa, wait. What am I looking at here?
Okay. That's a mouse. Okay, so your hand goes on, and your thumb goes on this crook. You see the brand name.
It looks like a Lego hand.
It does look like a Lego hand. Do you see the brand?
I love that you have it on a mouse pad too.
Yeah, I got a new mouse pad too. It's nice. It's like a.
Oh, I was under the impression that the mouse doesn't need to move, and the idea of putting it on a mouse pad was funny. But now I understand a little bit more. So wait, okay. I'm looking at the logo. What was the question?
What does it say?
iClever.
iClever?
iClever.
It says iClever. Every time I look down, I feel so stupid seeing this mouse that says iClever. Like, it's from 2006. Like, we're iCarly level, like. So, what do I do with that? Do I buff it out? Do I put a sticker on?
I feel like the sticker might mess with your ergonomics.
That's true. What about, like, you know how people touch up tattoos to say other things?
Yeah.
What could I do here? iClever.
So, the C and L are already so close, it could be a D.
iDever. iDenver. I could make it say iDenver.
This is more than one episode story arc, I think.
Yeah. Okay, we'll come back, dude. We're gonna have if to you think about have it. Suggestions for my iClever mouse. Anyway, so I'm fully peripheraled out. I feel on top of the world because I finished the Discord Ghosts manuscript and sent it to beta readers, and the feedback is already really great. And I did a good drawing earlier, and I also laid out some shit. Is good.
It feels good when you're in that like stride.
The feeling tops. When it is good and it is feeling right.
Yeah.
I knew we were gonna get punchy. So, this is a tabletop podcast about game design.
It sure is.
And today, we are going to talk about solo games.
It's just me, myself, and I.
Solitaire. Playing a game. All by myself. I am gaming.
Are you a solo gamer?
I have played solo games, and I've designed solo games.
But I noticed that you didn't say yes or no.
Okay, I wouldn't say, as far as type of gamer I am, I'm not sure. It's hard for me to say on any type of game, like even digitally, what I would say like, yeah, I'm that gamer.
Yeah.
They're
not exclusive. Like you can be a war gamer and a solo gamer and a party gamer.
I feel like I'm doing the thing that you shouldn't do. I'm not min-maxing. So I have a very low level in lots of things. But I would say that I love solo games. I wish I played more of them. But I think in quarantine, it's been pretty hard to try and do solo games. So I would say totally. That, like... although I have worked on plenty of solo games during this time, just like sitting down and being alone with my thoughts is actually not entertainment to me.
Terrorism.
Yeah.
I'm not.
What about yourself?
I would say I'm not a solo gamer. I struggle with both the sort of attention aspect of it, which I think is also, like you said, a quarantine thing of like, sitting down and doing a task, but I'll read them and especially like I'll still buy some, and I think that they're really fascinating.
Okay, so here is a phenomenon that happens to me. I wonder if it happens to you, where you will get and read a solo game, and it will be so, you'll get this like mouth-watering game feeling that like, I want to get in this experience and make it my life. Like when you hear this happen often to me with play stories from Thousand-Year-Old Vampire, where I would hear someone's story and I would be like, oh my god, that sounds like the best role-playing experience ever. I want to achieve those great heights. This is like everything that I've ever wanted. And then I can't... It's hard to get past the salivating phase and turn it into actually playing.
Yeah, I would say I agree. I actually... So Thousand Year Vampire is one of my examples of like a game I bought, I fully intended to play and was reading through, and then like kind of just never went back to. I have a very weird specific gripe with that book that is the paper is coated, so I can't use a pen.
Yeah, this is something that when Seb was making Dwelling was a actual thing that we talked about, which was making sure that the paper was right so you can write in the book.
Yeah, I really want to write in Thousand Year Vampire. I don't want to write on a character sheet or something.
Just dip it in acid and get the coating off.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Yeah, so there are so many solo games where their promise, the pitch, is like you said, the most appealing. Converting that to play is difficult. I mean, it's a case by case. It's difficult for me to do the actual playing. And
to
on
get
some
that
level,
play story that I imagine in my head,
right,
comes
right
out of it.
Because even just like getting the pitch of Thousand Year Vampire, there is a thousand years of story in my head that doesn't require me to even play. I mean, I guess, you know, I am playing it, but just not by the rules.
1,000 years of secrets revealed.
So I think we're in an interesting position where we want to explore solo gaming in a way that scratches those itches for us.
Yeah, I would say that, like, in the solo games I've made, so I've made a journaling one called Timber that was like one of my early zines, and it's like a questionnaire journaling thing that takes elements from USGS forestry reports from the 30s and then just interspaces that text about burning away forests to build new ones, and then questions about like relationships and dating and stuff. And then I've made one for Lucian's Hibernation Games thing that was like a phantom card game thing, which is like you're playing cards against a hand that is hidden, that is supposed to be operated by the narrative player that you're against. And things like that I'm really into. I think for me, having a very high game element, like not tactile, but like, what's the word for this? Like a lot of game hooks into it. It's not a prompt list, and it's not so much a guided story. It's like
mechanical interaction, I guess, or like,
yeah, I think that's it. Things like that really push me forward with those games.
I'm going to make a little bullet list of like parameters that we like and we want in this solo experience. So one thing that I think, and I wrote down mechanical interaction is the first one. I think being cognizant of play time, or like, this is a thing we talk about often where we like shorter games.
Yeah.
We like the ability to binge if we want.
Yes.
Episodes.
I think that's huge. Like that you can hit that next episode button instead of, you know, it's that thing that we've talked about before that you're saying right now is like the 3-hour movie versus 4 episodes of a TV show.
Yeah. I think too, that's where I struggle with a lot of solo experiences because they require a consistent, like, regular interval of time, even if that's not hugely demanding. You know, like, with journaling games, you don't often play them all at once. You write an entry per day, or you interact with it as real time passes. And I think that I struggle with just keeping that up or, like, making it a habit.
Right.
So I want a game that doesn't... I just wrote short slash increments
but also maybe doesn't interact with real world time in that way that kind of requests me to accommodate it.
Yeah, like a wave of post sad mech jam games had that kind of stuff. Does that sentence make sense, what I just said?
It does to me, but it's definitely one of those, like, it's a yes, yes, no.
Yeah. So, like, on... Yeah, it's really kind of a 3 years ago story game, solo game thing that it's like you have a journal, and the journal asks you to return every now and then. I think games like The Beast do really well. I played The Beast. Are you familiar with that one?
Yeah.
I played it. The deal with that game, it's awesome. You are entering a wild, weird, strange, scary relationship with a creature. And the creature is anthropomorphized into your notebook that you hide somewhere in your apartment. And I'm just sitting here in Toronto trying to remember where the journal is in my life. Is it in Boston? Is that my parents' house? Did I bring it here? No. I don't know where it is. Did I throw it away? Kind of hope I did. I know that my little brothers look through my boxes to find PS4 controllers. So it's a ticking time bomb. But yeah, what I want to hear a little bit more about, like, what hooks you with solo experiences that are not physical or that are not role-playing, because I love playing solo card games like Solitaire.
So that's a great point, because I actually have on my game shelf like a whole square that is just solo games like that, especially like the Oniverse games. So like Onirim and Urbion and Arion and all those like one player weird little nightmare creature games that are in the like uniform box.
That's cool.
I was really into those for a while. And then I have a few other card games like Herbaceous, that like herb garden growing game, that I really liked playing solo, and I didn't really like playing competitive or with other players. It feels like a more nice solitaire experience. So I do like this. I think it loops back to that mechanical interaction desire, but also the sort of puzzle-y aspect.
Yeah, I think something that I am cornering right now is that I don't want to understand all of the mechanics of the game while playing. I don't want to, like, figure out optimal things to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so I wrote down puzzle-y slash mystery, because I think...
Yeah.
That ambiguity is what is really desirable for us in what we're describing. Because I have also played like solo RPGs that are more like traditional, like challenge-based RPGs.
Yeah, like your Iron Sworns or...
Or so even more tactical, I guess, like the original Mystic Punks or... Oh, okay. Dark Fort, which was Merkborg before it was Merkborg, like the solo prototype of what that system was going to be. And they are really just like, you know, you enter a dungeon room, roll d20 to see what this room is, and then like roll d20 to see if you do an attack or whatever. Like, it is the challenge based experience, but it doesn't click for me, because it doesn't, It's like too mathematical, or like it is a solvable system insofar as it's statistics and numbers more than it is my creativity or my...
Yeah, what you're saying is like there's an optimal path through it that you could figure out, and it would trivialize it. This reminds me of something. One time I went to Quincy, Massachusetts to run Black Mass for an open table game thing. And I ran it, and it was super fun. Shout out to that table, that store, I forget what it's called. Maybe it's not even open anymore. And someone was there, too, who was running his solitaire dungeon game. And it was, like, very old school. Old school enough that, like, it was AD&D rules, and it had weapons like gauntlets of ogre strength and stuff like that, just classic stuff. And I was like, hey, I would love to play this. And then he proctored the adventure, and I played it solo, and he helped me like with all the rolls and all the Thaco shit. And I did so well, he was very surprised that I beat it on my first try and got the gauntlets and everything. And I was really proud of myself. But that's something that I, because we have all this knowledge, it becomes a logistics thing instead of a kind of expansive RPG storytelling deal.
I made one more note that I am curious how you'll feel about, but I think would be fun for what we're doing right now, whether it's less of an overarching like desire for a solo game, which is some sort of novel physical aspect of it, whether so it's not just rolling dice, it's maybe crafty or like you're making something through play, because like with the journaling game you're making journal entries, and I think that's cool. Like some of the thing with solo gaming is like to imagine the experience only in my head doesn't necessarily feel like I'm engaging in the right way. So right. I want there to be this like physical world aspect of my game.
There's something with like our jobs are so contingent on us regularly writing that a game that is just writing prompts ain't it to me anymore.
Absolutely. And it is again, like, I like that conceptually, but it's not different enough from work to feel like entertainment.
Yeah.
So cool. I think something where we make or are amending or like messing with some physical existence.
So I was just cruising through Flickr for the first time, really, because someone posted on Twitter that Flickr is like a really great resource for vintage graphic design stuff. And I immediately went to like antique stuff. And one of the things that I found was a spinner from a Halloween catalog from the 40s, maybe. And it has every element on the spinner is like a different, I think I saved it. Did you make something like this for Babes in the Wood?
I'm not sure what you're, I think I can picture the spinner. I think I've actually seen it in like a horror museum.
Yeah, I think it's that. So imagine like any spinner from a board game from like the Parker Brothers, just with a lot more entries. And
yeah,
what if the spinner is blank and the game is filling out the spinner?
I like that. And then afterwards you can use the spinner for this other purpose.
Yeah, like maybe, so just like pure structure wise maybe there's some kind of power creep where you are like getting more entries on the spinner is you mastering your environment, and by the time you have everything you play another game where it flips and you're playing against the spinner of this monster you've created.
Let's, for theme, since we are touching on Halloween and you mentioned Black Mass, I'm kind of picturing this as like a witch like study, almost like,
yeah,
how do we fulfill our witchiness?
Yeah, like it's someone, because I think there's the classic like a witch comes into their powers through this like personal perseverance and struggle against society, and then somewhere near the peak of their powers the Witchfinder General is leading a posse.
Perfect. So we have our two phases are witch's ascension and then like Witchfinder General persecution, or like avoiding the persecution.
So a spinner provides a really cool thing. What if the spinner is like representational of the witch's cauldron, and what you spin on it creates different combinations of things in that cauldron? And so maybe there's a book with it that is like every combination you are creating your own or applying names to different potions or poultices or things like that to get different effects in the world.
It's like a crafting game. Like we're yeah. crafting potions from components. It makes me think too of like how the crafting or alchemy works in Skyrim, where yeah. as you journey, you pick up ingredients and then you find an alchemy table and you're like, oh, what if I mix a giant's toe with a butterfly wing? And sometimes it's just like nothing.
Yeah.
And then other times it's like, oh, you found a potion of increased stamina.
And I feel like there's a whole generation of iOS games that were like God Simulator. And it's like you start with wood and water.
Yes,
and then you
yeah.
put them together and it's like you've got a boat. And then you put a boat together with steel and it's like you've got the Titanic. And you put the Titanic into an iceberg and it's like you've got the movie, the Titanic. And yeah, so, I think, like, yeah, go ahead.
Since a spinner is a circle, it's rotational, what if you also have, like, you have your spinner that you can flick and spin, but you also have, like, a watch.
Ooh.
And the watch, the second hand, is effectively, like, its own spinner. So you could use that
wow.
as, like, a randomizer, kind of, like, so you flick the spinner and it lands on, you know, 12 o'clock, like the very top entry. And it says, like, I wonder, you know, what we have two circles, like one of them is potion ingredients and the other are these sort of like emotional or story beats that the witch encounters.
Yeah, like the outer rim, the very outer rim yeah. is like, yeah, maybe it's even something like Phases of the Moon or something like that, or different. You know, like Hunter's Moon and Blood Moon and Worm Moon. Just, yeah. yeah, I totally buy it with what you're saying.
And then there's, with that too, like, you could have 30 interior circles and only 6 external, like,
yeah.
the measurements are different, so you can have different, like, overlaps and stuff. They might even be 2 different circles that you, like, cut and paperclip together.
Oh, that's cool.
And so the phases of the moon rotate or whatever. So anyway, what I was thinking with the watch was, like, I flick the spinner to land on something, and also where the second hand is on my watch is, like, the second randomizer.
Right. So, it's like a shifter for what's
yeah,
happening.
It's the 2d6, right? Like,
yeah.
you have 2 separate randomizers that combine into a larger system, so you end up with combinations of factors.
I love that it's enough for you to get, like, a visual gulp of the information, and then there is too much information, so you have to look it up, so it creates this dichotomy between, like, understanding and then seeing things coming and then learning. I think that that's super cool.
Yeah, and I think that then leads us to also, like, that creativity that can't be... Like, you can't really account for what the game is going to tell you in that way yeah. that we're trying to get away from
right.
prompt tables. Like, there's this interpretive aspect that we really love using in a lot of the stuff we talk about on the show.
Yeah, I think, like, for a log thing, the thing you are playing the game into is, like, the witch's grimoire or, like, the cookbook or something. And so for each new recipe you make, it also gets a unique combination of circumstances and your result on those circumstances. And then for each new poultice or salve that you make, there is a story for what situation that came in handy for and what you did.
Yeah. Or like how you discovered that this was
yes.
the correct formula or like...
And then when play switches over, when you've completed it, you are now the Witchfinder General. It's like a tower defense thing, trying to get through each recipe and to the witch and can see if you can survive.
I like the idea that our character is still the witch. Like, we spent this time being them and then, like, learning ourselves that the second phase, the Witchfinder General, is in pursuit. But yeah. we are doing the defense. Like, we are using our spells that we've crafted. So, like, yeah, phase one is creating the grimoire, and phase two is putting it to use to save yourself or save your culture, whatever it is that you, like, you're being a witch for, like, what reason you have to care.
Yeah, I think we can even, like, flavor, like, as for the four moons, we have four different antagonists that could come after you, depending on your playthrough what you're on and stuff. So, like, one of them is the Witchfinder General, and another is, like, the devil wants the book back.
You owe the devil. Or, like, the witch's council that says, like, you're not following the rules.
Right. And then another one could just be, like, an apprentice. It's like a Merlin and Morgan situation. Like, your apprentice is coming after all of your stuff and has been tricking you. And
yeah, there's so a lot of cool stuff there.
Those four stories, and each one of them you fill up your cookbook for. This game sounds cool.
Yeah. I'm gonna say it. Yeah, I also was just thinking, like, what if we made, like, what if you make your spell book a single-sided sheets, and then through the second phase of play, you have to, like, tear the sheets out to use them. So yeah, you could have these four enemies each as, like, an episode, basically. But if you use the, you know, molten steel spell when the Witchfinder General pulled out their pistol, like, now you don't have the molten steel spell when somebody else comes to your door with a pitchfork.
Yeah, yeah. That's really good. Or, like, yeah, my salt circle spell works for the devil, but when my apprentice who has been possessed comes after me, I've used that resource, so now I have to use something else or suffer a consequence.
Yeah. Dang. This is a cool one.
Dang. I mean, we got a little bit more time. We could answer some questions on the brain trust, but I think we nailed that.
Yeah, I would love to see that one come to fruition or, like, develop it further sometime. Just as a fleeting thought, I wrote down, we won't have time to get into it, but maybe, like, in a future episode we can revisit this. The solo game, this is a totally different, like, forget everything we talked about, but just going back to our bullet list of mechanical interaction, short increments, crafty and puzzly, a game where you're cutting things out and making, like, an art collage.
Oh, I love that.
Like, maybe you have a stack of magazines and there's some system for, like, roll to this page and take something from it, like, learn from it, and you're...
Yeah, maybe it's like that thing where we think dinosaurs are just skin stretched over bones,
right,
and there's nothing more. And so it's like the paleo art where people have to make all these assumptions based on it, and we are 4,000 years in the future, and all we have is a stack of Vogue magazines, and we cut out the pieces that we think and put them together and then whip a story up about this creature that existed in prehistoric Earth.
Honestly, that sounds like a really cool way to generate a bestiary for, like, any game, too.
Oh my gosh, that's good.
Like, taking National Geographic to make, like, bestial animals, because, you know, you're cutting out the scales of a Komodo dragon and the eyes of a gibbon or whatever, like, and then putting that in Merkborg or something as, like, this is a fucked up kind of troll.
Yeah, I think, like, even applying challenges for, like, only use three shapes to make this. Like, only cut out three shapes. Or so you have kind of a hit list of things that you need to collect, and maybe even their theme. So, like, bring me a creature who only ventures out at night. And then you're like, okay, I'm going to whip into this copy of Garden and Gun and figure it out.
I think even I was picturing more of, like, making a painting, like making a image from collage, but I really like making a focal thing, making a, especially like a living terror from from collage.
Yeah, I think there's so much that can be done, and even having like a hit list of like a landscape or a portrait or, you know, whatever.
I want to put a pin in this. I really want Aaron King to come on and make a collage game with us.
I think that sounds great.
Yeah. We'll reach out. We'll make that a thing in the future.
Hell yeah.
Let's hit me with those questions. I didn't mean to deter you.
No, that was great. I mean, I want to play that.
Yeah.
All right. We got questions from the Brain Trust. Jason asks, Cyber Metal question. What's next for the Darts Ludomatic universe? What a cool word, Ludomatic.
So for those of you who don't know, Darts stands for Death Agent Role-Playing Timeline Series. And this is sort of that alternate timeline that Cyber Metal 2012 is part of, that starts in the early 1980s and sort of like changes history around it. I had talked before on the show about having interesting moments along that timeline that I want to explore through games and through storytelling, and not just tell you here's the history of this world, but like let you interact with it. And truthfully, I had a really big plan. This was going to be like a probably 4 or 5 year plan to continue making games along that timeline that is kind of in stasis now since Cyber Metal's crowdfunding didn't do as well as I'd hoped. So it's not quite canceled, but I don't know what my next move is or what the direction's going to be. I was working on Hell War 1991 with Spencer Campbell. That was going to be a Lumen game that we were talking about on Spencer's Twitch channel last year. And, I started working on a game, like a story game, about playing your records backwards and hearing satanic messages and like early 80s satanic panic kind of game. I made a game a long time ago called Protest Singer about bands that make deals with the devil to get magic and fight oppressors. I was going to kind of reskin that to be in the Death Agent timeline and make that like a late 70s, early 80s metal game. So I don't know what's next. I don't know if any of those will come to fruition, especially because now I'm so burnt.
Yeah, right.
Those are all lovely ideas that I would love to visit. And I would also really like the maybe prospect of like sharing the timeline with other people and letting it be like, I don't know what happens in 1995 or whatever, you know, like
Right. Maybe
someone has some interesting perspective of a story that could take place in a different location or a different time along that timeline. So Darts will probably exist. It already obviously exists in Cyber Metal and in Y2K, but I would really love to explore that timeline a lot more, given the resources and the energy.
Yeah, like it is the, you know, heartbreaking thing about making games full time is that you have to sell them.
Yeah.
No matter what. And so, you know, it's just like these games sound so awesome and it's like they definitely have a home somewhere and, you know, hope they get made, but it's a reality that you could just kind of have to surf from successful thing to successful thing.
Right. And I've never really had so many ideas without the spoons to pursue them. So it's like a really weird thing for me to confront too. It's like I have ideas, but I don't have the resources to make them real. And normally I do, because normally I can do them on a smaller scale or I can make a zine or something. But each of those is like telling me it wants to be more involved and it wants to be on a caliber with Cyber Metal to be like, you know, a more real product.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a damning aspect of it is like none of them deserve to be like micro games. I want to give them the attention they deserve. So,
yeah, you know, I am consuming a ton of like art content right now. And one of the things that I learned was that, like, there is this feeling that I've had myself that's like, I have this idea and I can't wait to make it when I am in a place where I'm good enough to make it and I have the resources to make it. And this person was like, don't do that. Like, if you can, if you have the ability to make it with your current ability, just do it now, because later on when you would make it, you would just have an even better idea for something else.
True.
Like, you're just going to be able to do that because you made all this stuff here. And I certainly fall into this trap where I'm working on games that are, I counted Big Grave the other day. It's like 4 or 5 years old. And that kind of time scale is just ridiculous in RPGs. But, and I'm getting the ability to work on stuff faster and faster and making it however I can. But it's definitely a level of like polish that you and I desire for games, especially the ones that we are like, this is the game. Like, this is a capital G one.
Right.
That it just actually is, we are hurting ourselves by expecting that kind of polish and stuff.
Yeah, I've sort of came to that realization too with Soulburner, which was supposed to be coming out around now, but I'm delaying it till November because I just sort of lost the spark. In addition to a million other things like getting COVID and shipping Cyber Metal one by one and all the other speed bumps I hit this summer.
Fucking but, game found, yeah.
But in addition to that, I was like, I want to care about this. I don't want to put things out that I don't care about. And so I'm going to give myself a little time to recharge and reassess and like see what makes it special and what excites me about it, rather than just putting out like another clone game. And like, you know, I could have done that to meet the deadline, but it wouldn't have felt genuine. So,
yeah. And I think people that know you and your work know that you don't make shovel adventures.
Totally.
Or games like, each thing comes from this place of special creative spark. And then that spark is one thing, but it's your execution that everything is rendered by, which is the truly amazing part. So,
yeah,
breaks
I think
are good. Making the thing is good.
Circling yeah. back that, like, the darts games, each of them had that spark, but, like, it needs the fuel of resource to become a full fire. And whereas Soulburner, like, has the resources but needs the spark back. So, like, making a game is often waiting for the perfect storm.
Yeah, it just, like, it's extremely wild to me because if you pitch Cyber Metal in a, basically, like, the environment that Delta Green came up in, everyone would be playing darts games.
And right.
That would be, it would be in the same conversation as, like, a Delta Green or a Trail of Cthulhu or something like that. But, yeah, it's just, it's really hard because the only line of the game Disco Elysium I like, I don't like that game. It's not good. don't talk to me about it. But the one good line is they go to a abandoned game studio, and one of the characters remarks when seeing the plans for their game, it's like, it's almost that the less money they had, the more ambitious the project got. It's just like, I feel that all the time.
Yeah.
Nowadays. Like, I just don't have, there's no such thing as sweat equity anymore for my work because I need to pay rent with it. And so now everything is like in the same conversation as money.
Right.
That, yeah. And we know how some people feel about being relying on this for income in so many words that it's just a lot to. There's not a place where we can really talk about this. I don't know. That's kind of what I'm feeling at this point.
Do we have more questions?
Yeah. How are we okay?
Yeah, I'll just knock out a couple more.
No. That was the question. My joke was.
Are we okay? I'm okay. For now, I'm okay.
Hanging in there.
I'm in that in between where I'm mostly doing shipping. I'm not doing a lot of writing right now, and doesn't squeeze my brain, you know, like logistics are what they are. They take time, they take work, but they don't necessarily take my full brain energy. So in that way, it kind of feels like I'm coasting downhill for a little bit.
That's great.
I'm still on the bike, but it's not as strenuous.
Yeah, I think like the summer was really hard, the beginning of the summer, especially to get things to their next stage felt really difficult. Like, I feel like projects just became longer out of nowhere, but I'm hitting a lot of goals. I did the thing where I realized that I just needed more regular appointments with my friends to do stuff, and that's really helping a lot, I gotta say it.
Yeah, I have a few, not like standing things, but a few things to do, like social things that just really break up the sort of monotony that is work, especially logistic work, but like...
Yeah. Any computer fucking work. Like, yeah. Cool. We got a related question from the dice. What would a darts solo game look like?
That's interesting, because so much of darts is like societal, right? Like, it's about how this city changes over time and how a lot of this change is derivative of this one band, the Death Agent. So I think off the top of my head, a interesting solo experience would be like Death Agent's number one fan. So it's a game that takes place in the 80s. It's like,
that's really good.
I'm thinking to the episode we did a few weeks ago of Hot Mike and talking about heavy metal parking lot. So like, this person can travel. They're like maybe following Death Agent on tour. So each stop on the tour is an isolated experience for the gameplay, where you're like seeing the show. Maybe they're like a tape trader, and they're trying to like bootleg the audio and trade it with people.
Yes.
Which could be a really fun gameplay thing too, of like playing with tape or playing with paper to make like a sequence, like you would use magnetic tape for audio or something like that.
And I like the split solo group thing that like you can actually trade with another player.
Yes. Yeah. So like, you're recording cool experiences. You might, maybe one day you catch X, the guitar player X, like on the way back to the bus in the parking lot and get, you know, like a clip of an interview. Like you get to ask one question or something. And then that becomes this like canon of the band's fandom. And then, yeah, very like cool. You're now the, you know, oh, I got to talk to X. So like, do you want to hear my interview? And then you trade it for, you know, a song. Like maybe there's an aspect of creating music or listening to music.
Yeah. And then you can do like a lo-fi listserv thing where like you as the designer just puts everyone who got the game on BCC. And every time there's a new shred of detail, you send it to everybody. And yeah, like, so it's like you're part of a listserv or like a fan group.
Yeah, that actually sounds awesome. A shared solo experience of like fans archiving Death Agent tours. And fuck, now I want to make it.
I thought that it would be a fun mechanic to open up GeoGuessr and get slammed somewhere random, and that's where the tour date was that you saw them. And so you have to learn about the area and where they would play, and then it just gives you that prompt already.
That would be cool. Are there interiors, or are there like buildings in GeoGuessr, or is it more just like...
I think there might be an interiors one.
Because I really like the idea too of like, oh, this show sold out and I couldn't get a ticket, so I went to the bar, and like, here's a weird drunk dude that I met who thinks that Death Agent is the devil. Like, you know, again, goes back to the Hot Mic of like, the band is the focal point of everything, but there are stories being told around them.
That's great. That's killer.
Dang.
See? It happens.
The spark.
Gonna always have another good idea.
Yeah.
And to close us out, There is a question from Alfred Valley, who just released the Valley Method. Let me see what this is called. The Valley Standard. Alfred's releasing the Valley Method, which is a new weight loss program. No, it's called the Valley Standard, which is a style guide for solo RPG note-taking. So go check that out on Twitter at Valley of Alfred. But Alfred, friend of the show, asks, and I've got an answer for this one. I want you to design an RPG you can play in your head while you're trying to get to sleep. Well, it's just one question you got to ponder. What's longer, 12 30-day months or 30-month units, each of increasing value, up to 30? And you'll go to sleep every time.
Your scientists sure are have. Still are still debating which one is longer.
No one knows. I am the kind of prime researcher now. I'm definitely putting in the most work. So if you have an answer, I just need to see the timesheets. You will just get confused after adding two increasing three-digit numbers together in your head. I just can't do it. And then I go to sleep. And on that note, this has been another episode of the Brain Trust Podcast. Thanks for hanging out. We are doing a little bit shorter episodes than normal, recording them in batches. So that's why we were so handsome and funny this week. Adam, where can people find you?
Pick up Cyber Metal 2012 and all of my games in print at worldchamp.io. Digital is at worldchampgameco.itch.io, and my Twitter is at WCGameco.
And I'm Will. You can find my stuff at goodluckpress.co. And do me a favor. Go check out that Twerk Design Derby Jam. There should be a new adventure up there, half hardcore and an adventure template. And I know people are working on stuff for it. There's some cool stuff up there. And otherwise, grab Cyber Metal. And like in the last episode, try and fuck with our gang. I dare you. Anyway,
I'll see you at the Olive Garden.
I'll see you at the Olive Garden. What the fuck is up, Olive Garden? Brain emoji, handshake emoji.